Hello, and welcome to the Write Club podcast, where we take you behind the pages and into the fascinating world of writing. I'm Mary, and this is Beth, and we're part of the team at Writing Magazine and Writers Online. Hi, Beth, how are you?
Hi, I'm really good, thank you. Really excited about our guests this week. This week we've got Stephanie Burgess, who is a celebrated author renowned for her spellbinding blend of romance and fantasy, often referred to as romancy. With her Queens of Villainy trilogy captivating readers worldwide, Stephanie has become a leading voice in this emerging genre. Her work masterfully intertwines magical world building with deeply satisfying romantic arcs, delivering stories that enchant and inspire. Whether crafting tales of dark kingdoms or whimsical adventures, Stephanie's novels promise heartwarming connections and immersive escapism. Stephanie, welcome to the Write Club. Where are you joining us from today?
Thank you so much. I am sitting here in my home in Wales. So it's lovely to talk about romanticy, and I'm just so excited about this.
Oh, brilliant. Is that where you usually write? Is that your writing space?
Honestly, it is. I have two kids, and it's a very active household. And so quite often I just end up huddling up. Well, I say huddling, but comfortably snuggling up in my bed and writing on my laptop that way.
Oh, lovely. Romanticy is a really exciting genre. For those who might not be familiar with it, could you describe it for us?
Sure. Yeah, so it's been a genre for a long time, honestly, because I will say I am in my late 40s, and the books I really fell in love with as a young teenager, we would now call romanticy, but back then there wasn't a word for it. It was just fantasy that was also romantic, that also had a fun romance intertwined. And over the years, people have argued about what the right terms are, whether we should call it fantasy romance or romantic fantasy, and where's the line? And romanticy seems to be the new winner. So again, it's just about any kind of story that includes a satisfying romance along in a fantasy setting or with a fantasy world building around it, wherever it's set, whether it's set in Leeds or in a high fantasy kingdom.
Oh, amazing. And what drew you to combine the romance and the fantasy in your writing?
Honestly, they were always my two absolute favorite genres. From the time I was very young, I grew up on Lord of the Rings and C.S. Lewis, and then moving towards the much more recent fantasy writers. So I loved fantasy from the very beginning. And then I fell in love with Jane Austen and Georgia Heyer when I got to my teens, and I loved romance. And so it just always seemed obvious that the best possible world is where you get to mix both of those together.
Yeah, absolutely. It seems like perfect for you, doesn't it?
Exactly.
And your Queens of Villainy trilogy has been a massive hit. Can you just tell us a little bit about your inspiration behind that?
Sure. I was thinking about how fun villainesses are, for instance, when I watched the film Sleeping Beauty as an adult, I don't think I'm alone in thinking that Maleficent is the most fun of all the characters. And she's so stylish and funny, and she has this castle full of, there's this one scene in the movie where the goblins are all having this fantastic dance, and it just so fun and spooky and cool. And she can also turn into a dragon. And obviously, she's the bad guy in that film. One of the things that was picking at me as an adult was how we define bad guys and who gets termed a bad guy and what kinds of identities are othered and turned bad, and how uncomfortable our culture has been, for at least centuries, I can say with confidence, with strong women wielding power. And the fact that, witch was an insult for a very long time and still is. The Prime Minister of Australia many years ago, one of the things that she was called by her opponents was a witch. And all those things coming together made me think how much fun it would be to take that kind of traditional villainess, a notorious, terrifyingly powerful witch queen who lives in this castle in the mountains and has all these terrifying monster servants and so forth hanging out with her, and make her the heroine of the book. And then, of course, she needs, I think women always need, to have a support group of some sort. I think that's actually vital for getting through our lives if we can possibly find them. And I know that my friends are the ones who've gotten me through all of my hardest times. And also thinking on a larger world building level, I thought there's no way, no matter how powerful this one queen is, she's going to be able to stand against the whole empire and everyone who hates her unless she's got allies. So I came up with the alliance that calls itself the Queens of Villainy, because there are these three queens of independent kingdoms. Everyone sort of hates and resents them, and they decide to ally together to help each other and stand, you know, strong against imperial expansion. So that's sort of where it all came from, along with my longstanding love of gothic romance, you know, because I always loved the trope of there's the sinister guy who, whether it's Jane Eyre or whether it's Victoria Holt or whether it's Cressley, you know, it's one of our more recent fantasy romance novels where there's the sinister, powerful guy. And then there's the innocent, slightly younger heroine who comes in and is quite often on the run, you know, fleeing from something, takes a job as a governess or a housekeeper or something. And, you know, I thought how much fun it would be to flip those roles around. So she's the sinister, powerful one, and he is the slightly younger, more innocent, more gentle, you know, partner in the relationship.
She's a fantastic character. I'm reading it at the moment, and I love the scenes where she's sort of sweeping through the castle with all her crows, and they sort of mimic all her emotions, and it's really powerful. I love it.
Oh, thank you.
And the promise of a happy ending is crucial in romance. How do you keep the resolutions fresh and satisfying, especially in a connected series like this one?
It's one of the biggest challenges of writing any romance, and I think there's an added element when you're writing romanticy, because the stakes aren't just the personal ones we might grapple with every day, like, oh no, my parents don't like him, or, you know, or don't like her, or whatever. But their, you know, entire countries can be at stake, you know, all sorts of magical issues may be in play. And yeah, I would say the biggest challenge of writing romanticy is making it believable that there will be a challenge to them coming together, that, you know, it would be really hard to give them a happy ending in the circumstance, but then making it happen. And that involves a lot of hair tearing out and plotting and revision. And it also just involves really, really thinking about how you can use elements from seeded throughout the book to come up with an ending that makes sense, even as parts of it are surprising. You always want the reader to think in the moment, ooh, you know, I didn't anticipate that, but actually it all makes sense now that I look back on it. And it requires both partners to do something that they couldn't have done at the beginning of the book, you know, because they've both grown as people through their relationship, through the events of the book. So, and that finally in the end, they can stand together as a much more powerful unit than either of them was in the beginning.
And how do you plot that? Do you have that plot in mind before you start writing, or are you going back and adding bits in?
Some of both, honestly. For this particular book and series, I sold it on proposal to my publisher. And what that meant was that I had to turn in the first 10,000 words and of book one, along with a sort of 7-page outline of what was going to happen in the book. And then I did much shorter, much more vague outlines for books two and three, where I basically just set out what was going to be the overarching, you know, plot of the series. You know, this is the situation. All three queens are trying to keep their kingdom safe from this empire that wants to expand and devour them. And from there onwards, I'm mostly an instinctive writer in my first drafts. You know, as I'm going along, I'm always thinking, what would be the most awkward thing that could happen next? What would be the most complicating issue that could come up here? What would be, you know, the most embarrassing moment, et cetera? And do that, and then follow up. And what are the consequences? And make sure it's really pulling on the characters' strengths and weaknesses, you know, each of these complications and new challenges that they're facing. And then I fix it in revision quite a lot, because at the end I'm like, okay, so now I really have an idea of what the story is. At this point, I need to go back and add all sorts of foreshadowing and make sure that it all makes sense in the end, that there aren't any holes because I changed my mind halfway through the draft. And now I need to go back and make sure this all is consistent. And, you know, if I wanted her to be able to do this one thing at the end, I can't have her saying that's, you know, literally impossible in the beginning, et cetera.
Career spans multiple genres and audiences. How has your approach to writing evolved over time?
Well, I have learned over the years of my career to be able to write outlines ahead of time, which is something that I couldn't do in the beginning. I would have said, it's just not possible for me. I don't think I'm ever going to be the kind of writer who sits down and does a 50-page detailed, you know, outline with chapter by chapter, this is going to happen here and this will happen here. And I have friends who do, and I love it for them because they, you know, that's how they work, and they write great books. That's never going to be how it works for me, but I've learned the ability to do what needs to be done professionally, honestly, With the wonderful comfort of knowing that I've never had a publisher be upset if my final draft turned out to have different things or more things happen in it than was laid out in the outline, as long as the tone is still the same, as long as I get to the certain point that I've promised, then they don't really mind how I got there as it went along.
Oh, amazing. And I think you've kind of touched on this a little bit, but when you do have sort of like a book in mind or an idea in mind for a novel, what do you start with? Do you start with the characters, the world, the plot? Start with to get that thing rolling?
It sort of depends on the novel. I think my first published book, which was a middle grade fantasy, which actually is romantasy linked because it's about the little sister of a Jane Austen style romantic heroine, and the little sister is having magical adventures while her older sisters are having romance. And so for that one, it started with a very clear voice in my head, sort of with the opening. I sort of scribble that down. And that's happened a few times in my career. Most of the time I have sort of it's a little tenuous, but sort of an image that occurs to me. And then I think, oh, this is interesting. Like, where could this come from? And it's often quite different from what turns out. For instance, with Wooing the Witch Queen, I actually came across the first opening I ever wrote for it in one of my old notebooks the other day. And I thought, wow, that's, that changed a lot. But it was almost the identical opening paragraphs of the book as it's published now. But the character who's now Felix, the widowed Archduke, was a woman. She was a widowed, I can't remember if she was what her exact title was. But, and because I had this like image of someone sitting in this opera box trying to decide whether they're actually going to go along with their in-laws' plan to kill them, basically, and take their position. And they've been they're grieving, so they've been numb. And, this is sort of the moment of breaking free of the grief and making an active decision. Like, I can't just sit back and let this happen. I need to get out. But it wasn't quite there yet. And that opening kept on tugging at me. And then it finally, and I was thinking, well, obviously she'd run away and it'd be sort of gothic thing. And I love gothics. And I don't know why this isn't working for me quite yet. And finally it hit me like this lightning bolt. It's like, aha, it's him. He's running away. She's the gothic sinister. And suddenly I was interested and I was invested. And that was when it sort of came together. And then I was like, okay, now I have to come up with the world they're in and what's the situation and how much magic is there? They're at the opera house. Is it lit by gas lamps or is it lit by, I don't know, fae lights or whatever else? So once I've got the concept in my head, that's when I can start narrowing down on all the detail work of the world building.
Quite a long time, is it, before you put pen to paper?
Quite often it'll be years before I actually manage to get properly started on a book after I've written down my opening scene, the first scene that occurs to me or a little snippet or just made a note of the concept. I'm compulsive about writing down every idea I have in a notebook, and I keep all of my notebooks and I go back through them regularly. And because I think Wooing the Witch Queen, I first wrote down an opening for it back in 2018. And then every so often, probably every 6 months or so, I'd think about it again. I think maybe I should try this way instead. And I try to write another opening. I was like, it's not quite there yet. And then I'd set it down for another 6 months. And while I was working on other books in the meantime, many of which I had started thinking about years before that. So it's a long process. And I don't know if that's particularly true because I am sort of an intuitive writer rather than someone who sits down and thinks, this is act three, this is act two, this is where the call to action needs to come, whatever, but because I'm sort of coming up with a story organically and waiting for pieces to come together, it can take quite a long time between that initial inspiration and the actually sitting down and getting this book written.
Oh, that's fascinating. And when you start writing, like you've finally kind of done all your planning in terms of what you're hoping the book to be, how long does that take you from like start to finish?
Usually about 8 months. I'm not a very fast writer, but I'm a steady writer. So yeah, I think the books in this series are generally around 85,000 words, and it's generally about 8 months of writing between getting it started and turning in a draft I'm okay with to my editor.
Oh, amazing. And what does a typical writing day kind of look for you? Are you one of those people that has your set working hours from 9 to 5, or do you do things a little bit different?
I would love to be able to do that. But I do have two kids, and for various reasons, neither of them is able to attend school. So I've got two kids at home all the time. And luckily, my husband is also at home because he's also a full-time writer. So we're able to hand off, but we still have people coming in and out, like tutors for the kids and so forth. And it's often quite difficult to predict exactly how the day is going to go. So I am very dedicated to getting my hours of writing done every day. But when those hours come is up in the air every single day, pretty much. What I would do on an absolutely ideal day where I didn't have to worry about anyone else is I would have breakfast, I'd have coffee, I would write for a couple of hours, take a break, write for, in another few hours, do all the marketing and other admin stuff that comes with being an author, and say, okay, I'm done at 5 or 6. But as it is, sometimes I'm writing until very late at night. I usually don't take off weekends, et cetera. I'm not recommending that as a plan for other writers. I'm just saying that's how it's worked out for me, for better or for worse.
Oh, amazing. And you said that your husband's a writer, is published as well. And
yes.
Is there a competition between the two of you?
No, we actually met at a fantasy and science fiction writing workshop in America back in 2001. He was living in Bristol at the time. I was living in Pittsburgh in America. We both had to travel to get to this workshop in Seattle. It was a 6-week residential workshop called Clarion West. It's fantastic. I highly recommend it to anyone who has any interest in writing science fiction or fantasy. And by the time the 6 weeks were over, we had agreed that I would be applying to postgrad in the UK because we knew by then.
God, that's giving me goosebumps.
It was lovely. I went there to improve my writing. I did not plan to find my life partner, but it was a great bonus.
That's amazing. Get 2 for 1, eh?
Absolutely. So he also writes fantasy. His name's Patrick Samphire. He's had a couple of kids' books published, and he also writes fabulous, funny, snarky, dark fantasy mysteries. It was a very different subgenre than mine, but it's great because we can read each other's work, and he's my best critiquer.
Oh, amazing. Well, what a perfect partnership.
Absolutely. Financially, not always, but emotionally, absolutely.
As romanticy grows in popularity, what advice would you give to writers wanting to break into the genre?
I would really say the one thing I've learned across the years, I think it was 2008 when I sold my first trilogy, and it was 3 years before that when I got my first agent. So it's been 20 years that I've been in the trying to sell books, business. And I would say the one thing I've really learned is you have to focus on making the book fun for yourself. Don't try to chase trends, because if you're just chasing a trend, first of all, you may well come up with something soulless that doesn't appeal to people who actually like that stuff. Second of all, if it doesn't sell, then you've had nothing. You've just given up this massive chunk of your time and energy when you could have been writing something you cared about, and it's gone, and for no luck. Because in general, I can tell you that every book I've written to try to please someone else's taste has not gone. It has never, ever sold. And not all the books I write for myself sell by a long way. But at least if I write them and, a publisher doesn't want them or my agent doesn't like them, at least I have had the satisfaction of writing a book that really felt like me and that really made me happy and satisfied to write it. And of course, the great thing now in the 2020s is that we have the option of self-publishing books that don't sell traditionally. And I'm actually a hybrid author nowadays. I am traditionally publishing this trilogy, but at the same time, I am still putting out novellas myself, romantic novellas. And I've promised to get a third book in my Regency Dragon self-published series out sometime in the next few years. So that's on the back burner. And especially with having that fallback, there's just no reason not to let yourself write the book that you want to write, the book that you really want to read. And because if you're really yearning for a book like this, then it's almost a guarantee there's going to be someone in the world who's yearning to read it.
Yeah, lovely. So in relation to that, do you see any common mistakes that aspiring writers make when crafting romance or fantasy?
I think you can tell sometimes if writers haven't read a lot of romance or fantasy, and it's never a good idea to write a genre that you don't read yourself. Even if, once you get started, I completely understand if you have, for instance, when I'm writing a book, I struggle to read anything that feels too connected to that book. I don't want to have any influence from other people's coming in and, you know, sort of muddying up, you know, my writing for this book. You know, so if I'm writing Gaslamp Romancy, then I will probably be reading mysteries while I write it and then wait to read the Gaslamps until I'm finished with the draft. But before you start writing a genre, you should really take some time to read a lot of books in that genre, in that subgenre. Not just one author or one style, you know, get an idea of the real diversity that's in there. For instance, there are definitely people who think if it's fantasy, it has to be in a European style medieval kingdom because that's fantasy. And in fact, in the fantasy field, we've been having, you know, contemporary fantasy set in, you know, the contemporary UK. There's, you could do fantasy based on all sorts of different, you know, West African fantasy. You can, anything different is something that publishers often really like to see. Anything different that you feel confident on doing well is a really good idea. And if you decide what you want to do is medieval fantasy setting, then make sure you think it through. Don't just go to automatic, oh, well, they all have castles, but it's all really clean somehow, even though in medieval Europe, it was definitely not. You know, everything's pretty, everyone's teeth are perfect. You know, there better be magic involved if that's the case. Yeah. So that's on the fantasy side. On the romance side, there are a couple things that romance readers get really upset about that you don't want to include. And the biggest one, of course, is not providing a happy ending, because that is the promise. It's like, no matter how bad things get, I promise if you stick with this, it's safe to invest in the characters because these people will end up together and happy, you know? And that's the emotional catharsis and the comfort of reading romance. So people who come to it and like, oh, I'm going to be radical. I'm going to write a romance where they don't end up together. I'm like, okay, but that's not a romance. Mm-hmm. No, feel free. You can write tragic romances. You can in any genre, but don't call it a romance because that's the whole point of the romance. And also, you know, there are other things to look out for that you just know if you've read enough romances. It's like, it's really not a good idea. Like, I can't think of a single time I've read a romance where either of the partners cheats on the other partner during it. It's one thing if one of them is in a relationship before they get together, you know, people are people, and readers are fine with that generally. But once they're together, you know, that's really, it would be very difficult to convince readers that their happy ending is going to be together if either of them has cheated on the other in the meantime.
There's a few unforgivables.
Yes, absolutely.
Fascinating. And I mean, going back a little bit to talking about trends and stuff, I mean, I'm on BookTok, as most people are, and all I see at the minute is romanticy. That's all anybody is talking about. So I'm just curious, have you read like the trending books as such, like the ACOTAR series, and is it Fourth Wing, and the Powerless trilogy? Have you read those, and what are your thoughts in terms of the trending books and whether they're like real romanticy?
Not going to be able to comment in detail about either the Fourth Wing series or the Sarah Maas series because I haven't read them. Honestly, it's just not the super epic, super high stakes ones are not my cup of tea, which is not to say that anything bad about them. It's just, I'm a reader. I have my own personal preferences. I prefer cozier romanticies. So I really love Sangu Mandana's romances. There's The Very Secret Society of Irregular Witches, and then her new one that's coming up is A Witch's Guide to Magical Innkeeping, I think. And oh my gosh, I read an ARC of that and I just loved it. It's so good. And that's the thing. I think people can sometimes, I think BookTok is fantastic. I think it's done so much good with, you know, spreading love of reading and all sorts of stuff. But I think people make a mistake if they only focus on the type of stuff that gets a lot of attention on BookTok, because there's a lot more diversity to romanticy than you'd never necessarily guess from that. And you don't have to be writing this super epic, super angsty, super high stakes books in order to do very well in romanticy. There's a real hunger for the cozier things too.
Oh, amazing. Yeah, I've read the first A Court of Thorn and Roses. I've got the second one to read, and I just was interested really to see what your thoughts were on it, because I'm not a massive fantasy reader myself, but I did enjoy the first book. I didn't know, because I've not read much of it in the past, I didn't know whether that was representative of the rest of the genre or whether that was a one-off, completely random, different sort of book to what the rest of the genre is like. So that's really interesting though. And can you give us a little bit of a sneak peek into what you're working on next?
Absolutely. I'm about to launch into copy edits for book two in Queens of Villainy. It's called Enchanting the Fae Queen. And again, it's sort of flipping tropes because she is the scandalous, heartless seductress, sort of the rake in the situation. And he is the famously moral, virtuous, and virginal partner. And so that was a fun dynamic to flip around. And it stars Queen Lorelei of Belravia, who's a very mischievous, troublemaking character in the first book, and versus the high general of their enemy empire. And they end up thrown, I don't want to like give any spoilers from the ending of book one, but I'll say through unexpected circumstances, they end up being thrown together into a very dangerous fae tournament. And having, so it's enemies to lovers, they have to work together and fight at each other's side to survive and see what happens next.
Ooh, that sounds amazing. And when are you hoping to get that one out?
The publication date actually just changed because it was supposed to be February 19th. That was in 2026. But I just heard from my American editor that they're pulling the publication date back in America to January. And I believe that the UK publisher is going to follow suit. So I'm hoping it will be the end of January 2026. Knock on wood.
Right. And have you got an outline for the third one as well?
Absolutely. I have written the first three chapters and submitted them to my editor.
Oh, how exciting.
And that one is Melting the Ice Queen, which is a sapphic marriage of convenience.
Oh, great. I'm
very excited about that.
That one, will that be 2026 as well?
At the moment, I think it's going to be 2027, but if it gets pulled back again, like the last one, you know, we can hope.
Yeah. Oh, amazing. I mean, I must admit, the first one looks great on my bookshelf. I absolutely love the
front
cover.
Doesn't look good. I love that cover.
It's amazing. So yeah, I'll definitely be having a look at the second and the third. It's great.
Yeah, I know a lot of American readers actually ordered the British edition because they liked it so much.
Did you have one? Did I see online you had one with a sprayed edge?
Yes, that was the Owlcrate edition, which is beautiful. So gorgeous. It was in a couple of book boxes, Owlcrate and the Bookish Box. And it was such an incredible experience to get to have all these artists working on my book. And it was a dream come true, honestly.
Oh, that is amazing. And we always try and end by asking for a book recommendation. So have you got a novel that you've read recently that you'd like to recommend to our listeners?
Ooh, so many. That's such a good question. I really loved... Let's see. I'm sorting through my ideas.
You can recommend one of your own as well if you need to.
Oh, no. No, I won't go that far. I really loved I'm turning around so I can look at it on my bookcase and make sure I get the title right. I really loved Sarah Beth Durst's book, The Enchanted Greenhouse, which is coming out this summer. But if you don't want to wait to read that, her first cozy romantic novel is called The Spell Shop, and that's wonderful too.
Oh, amazing.
So thank you so much, Stephanie, for joining us and sharing your incredible insights in romantic and writing. It's been a real pleasure to have you on the Write Club podcast.
Thank you so much. This has been really fun.
Thanks so much for taking the time. We've had a really great chat.
Me too. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning into the Write Club. We hope you enjoyed this episode and feel inspired to keep writing. Don't forget to sign up for our newsletter at Writers Online, your go-to for writing tips, competitions, and exclusive updates. Plus, you'll never miss an episode of The Write Club. Until next time, happy writing.